G'day you mob, welcome to this episode of Aussie English. I'm your host Pete Smisson and today is part two of my interview with Justin Hammond. If you didn't see the previous episode with him, go check that out before listening to this one. In today's episode, we talk about his experiences living in Ukraine and Russia and the cultural relationship between the two countries, how he left Ukraine just before the Russian invasion and escaped to Georgia, his thoughts on the ramp up to the invasion, how the war will change Ukraine and Ukrainian identity for the worse in the short term, but the better in the long term, what Ukrainian people thought of Zelensky before and then after the invasion, the discrimination against Russians who are against the war and have fled the country, the power of Putin's propaganda in Russia in controlling the population and what they know and believe, and lastly, his expectations of how this invasion will end and the fallout from it. So guys, without any further ado, I give you Justin Hammond.
So, all right. So facing the elephant in the room, we haven't got to it yet, but I've been sort of interested in how you learned Russian and everything. You were in Ukraine, right? When everything went down. So were you, I guess, what was that like? What was that experience like? You left the country and were you anticipating what happened as someone who has been to Russia many times and sort of understands the culture and probably has experienced Putin quite a bit? Yeah.
So, yeah, good question. So, I was in Russia and we started getting warnings from, you know, the allied governments over the embassies that send you messages about, hey, there's a buildup going on. You should consider leaving or just take caution and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of started around mid-January. Then reports started coming out that I think it was from like the CIA and the US saying that, you know, this would likely happen around mid-February based on how long they've had troops on the border. They couldn't economically like finance keeping them there much longer past like mid-March. Mm-hmm. And so what was interesting about it though was just the general mentality of Ukrainians there and everybody, like nobody believed anything was going to happen. And so it was extremely business as usual. Like just nobody was doing anything. Nobody was leaving. People were just going to the gym and schools were running and everything like that. And so I left around like the 4th of February, 5th of February for a week. I went to Istanbul and to Turkey and whatnot, hung out with a friend. But then as we kind of came up into like closer to mid-February area, I thought, well, you know what? I'll go back to Ukraine. I needed somewhere to go, but I'll go to the west. I'll go to Lviv. You know, that way if something happens, at least I'm like further west and it's safer and all that kind of stuff. So I flew back into Lviv like the Saturday morning, the Saturday before the war, which started on Friday, the 23rd. And like right after getting off the plane was, you know, more messages from the Canadian government, from the US and all the people saying like, you have to like get out as soon as possible. They were saying even get out like before Sunday night, if you could. And I just flown back in. And I'd booked a month on Airbnb and everything. So I had to get the refund for that. But what I found interesting was like, again, like Ukrainians were also privy to this information. And that Saturday morning when I flew in, I came out of this cafe while waiting for my Airbnb. I remember like walking past this group of school kids and this lady being like, hey, I'm your tour guide. So we're going to show you around Lviv. Like, again, just everything was so business as usual. Wow. Nobody believed anything. And even when I left and I had to get a refund for my Airbnb, my Airbnb host was like, oh, are you afraid? Like, it's just Putin playing his games and stuff like that. Nothing's going to happen. We've been at war since 2014, you know, when the initial occupation of Crimea happened. And so really, you know, the Ukrainian response was always like, we've been hearing this for 8 years, right? There's nothing new. And I'm trying to say like, well, no, 170,000 troops on your border is new, but anyways, you know, and so this kind of idea of like, I was considering staying just because I'm like, hey, if, you know, the war starts, it'll happen in the east. And then, you know, once it starts, then I'll leave. But then they started talking about how it would likely start with airstrikes, similar to the way it did in Georgia, and in which case it wouldn't matter where you are in the country nor how far west you are. Like, it's not going to matter. They were warning, like, you're likely going to have to shelter in place, lose access to internet, potentially to food, everything like that. And I'm like, hey, well, I didn't sign up for that. So basically, yeah, especially with the airstrikes and everything, you know, I thought, okay, whatever, I'll get out. And all the governments were telling people to get out. So I went ahead and did that and came to Georgia. But But yeah, I left on, so I think I left on like the Monday morning, and basically that Wednesday was February 16th, which is when the CIA had determined that Putin had told the Russian military to be ready to move. And so basically flights for like that Monday, Tuesday, you know, to Istanbul went from like $150 to like $650, $700, right? Like they were just prices were skyrocketing. He basically had to like rush to get something. Obviously Airbnb prices started going up like crazy. And so I just kind of looked at it as like, yeah, to me, Georgia was like the cheapest flight I could find. And then, or to Poland, it was a bit cheaper, but then like the Airbnbs were jacked up more there. And still at the time they were much less jacked up here in Georgia. So I ended up getting like finding a good Airbnb, paid a little bit more for the ticket to come to Georgia. And then, yeah, I kind of got here on like that the Monday or whatever. I came in like Monday at that night or the next morning on the Tuesday. And then the war started on the Friday, like 4 days later.
How did you find out about it?
About the war?
Yeah. Well, like, did someone message you? Did you watch the news? And what was going through your head when that happened?
Oh, and when I woke up and all the bombing started at like 5:30 in the morning, that Friday morning. And I woke up like on Instagram and all the posts and everything that people, like my friends filming it, like you could see the smoke from their balconies if they were in Kiev, because Kiev got hit first. Mm-hmm. But I think there was also, there's some other places in Kharkov and Odessa, but like people literally just like friends sending me videos or like filming from their balcony. You could see the smoke coming from wherever like the airstrikes hit. Then the pictures started coming in. Right. And so that I just kind of laying in bed, I woke up at like 7:30, just laying in bed, just kind of like going through like all the messages that people are either sending or posting. And then since then, it's just been like a nonstop every day of like everything from like murder videos to like, you know, to just like the dead bodies to the buildings to, you know, everything like that. So it's kind of just like, you know, pick your day, right? It's just crazy. And really everybody's reaction was like, we really didn't think this was going to happen. And whatnot. And what's sad about it is a lot of people couldn't leave or wouldn't leave because men aged 18 to 60 aren't allowed to leave Ukraine during the war. So either families have left and left like their brother, husband or father behind, or others feel, you know, inclined to stay because they don't want to leave their father, brother, or husband behind. So they're stuck there as well.
Yeah, I've got a few. I created an episode, Voices of Ukraine, and published that on the podcast recently, giving the sort of people in Ukraine a chance to talk about what they were experiencing on the ground. And some of them, like I had sort of deeper conversations with, and they were like, I was like, are you getting the fuck out? Like as much as I want Ukraine to win, and I know that a lot of people need to stay there and fight in order for that to happen. Once you create a relationship with someone, you're kind of like, I just want you to be safe. Like, fuck staying there. Just get out. You've got a child. You've got a wife. You've got an old parents. And a lot of them are just like, I can't. I've got family here. I've got friends here. I have to protect my children. But yeah. It's rocking a hard place. Like, talk about how hard it is. It's just insane. What was going through your head when this happened and when you found out this news? Were you thinking, fucking knew Putin would do this? Or were you like, oh man, I had no idea that was coming, you know?
I thought there was like definitely going to be an incursion, but not, I thought it was just going to be more contained to the east and more formalizing. So basically there was like Luhansk and Donetsk areas, but then there's the actual region which extends a bit further beyond, and that's what he essentially recognized the independence of a couple of days earlier.
Yeah.
And so I just assumed it was going to be more of an incursion into those areas in order to formalize those territories for Russia, that there would have been fighting and it would have been contained on the east or whatnot. I wasn't really expecting like the whole airstrikes and everything like that, even though they said like if it started, that's how it would happen. So I was kind of surprised about that, definitely. So I think that part surprised me, but I assumed it would have been more like, I don't want to say casual, but yeah, just more of like sort of like a slow incursion into that eastern area to take the areas that they just, you know, recognized as sovereign.
Well, and the expectation, from what I understand, was that Putin and the Kremlin and his cronies around him thought that Zelensky was going to run off with his tail between his legs almost instantly, right? And he was given the opportunity to leave for the US, I think, or at least to be evacuated by them. And I think I loved his message, which was like, I don't need a ride. I need tanks, or I need ammo, or I need weapons or something, right? Effectively that. And so what's your sort of conception of what's happened since and the way in which Zelensky has stood up and become this insane hero, political figure, right? That every single person now is going to know his name, right? Like globally, you would imagine, sort of on level with Churchill, you know, in World War II. Was that something that you were expecting, that the average Ukrainian was expecting to happen? Did they think much of him prior to current events? And what's your sort of feeling of what they think of him now?
So before, he was more so popular with the younger generations. The older generation's not as happy with him, but now people seem to be like really supportive of him or whatnot. So he's definitely like won a huge amount of points politically, and had he left, it would have been an overthrow. Like he wouldn't have been able to leave and then stay in power. He would have been overthrown. So I think that like he's done a great job with it, and I think that it was a bit of a risk assessment. Like I think that I want to say that I don't think Russia was necessarily expecting the amount of military aid to come in through weapons and training and all that stuff that's been brought in. At the same time though, they're also just weighing the pros and cons. Like they haven't sent all their troops. Russia could take it in like 24 hours if they wanted to. It would just be a matter of at what cost. How many civilians do you kill? How many buildings do you destroy? But they have the firepower to literally just knock down every building and run it over. It's just a matter of, at what cost do they do it, right? And so I think that's kind of what like is probably the decision there and everything. So it's sort of a weird kind of environment, I guess, to be in. I think that a lot of people certainly didn't expect something like us or to be in this sort of environment afterwards. And then the fallout from it, everything from, you know, Ukrainians being displaced to the discrimination that Russians are facing who have fled and come, you know, here to Georgia and to other countries or whatnot. Like they're huge discrimination against regular Russians right now.
In Russia that support this stuff, or in Ukraine, or just everywhere, or...
So like the discrimination against Russians who have fled from Russia to Georgia, who, for example, like because like they're cut off from the banks because they don't support the war, in Moscow and in other places of Russia as well, like the police can stop you and they're reading their phones.
I saw
their text messages. Yeah. So there's a lot of people who, you know, are against the war, and you basically can't go back to Russia anymore. Any foreign income that you have to legally put it back into rubles. 80% of what you make has to be converted back into, or you face 100% of a fine of what you made. You know, they basically at that point, they just steal your money. And so there's all these new laws that are coming out, like as of like March 1st and March 12th and all that stuff, that is just like really hardcore affecting, you know, Russians and stuff. And obviously that is in no comparison to what Ukrainians are experiencing. It's just to like point out that like, these consequences have not only affected Ukrainians, moving, affecting other people as well. And then especially the people that are against the war, like a lot of people are not supporting it and wanting to, but you can't say anything when you're there.
Yeah.
Right. And
well, you know, you face 15 years in jail, right, for mentioning it as a war or invasion or countering the message from the Kremlin publicly. So, and you know, from my understanding, you can obviously talk to this better than me, but the Russian police are not exactly the most sympathetic to dissidents, right? So,
I think that shows, like, I think like the average human being is against killing other people. So I think that really just shows the power of the propaganda. And you kind of understand like how the Nazis were able to do things that they did back in the day, especially when they had way less control. Like they had control over the media and everything, but at the same time, they didn't have, you know, Ukrainians and Westerners and all that stuff, you know, helping combat that, right? So you can kind of see just how powerful propaganda really is, and how it works on people. And it's terrible in that way.
What was your understanding and experience of the relationship between the two countries prior to this? And I guess the members of each country, how they viewed one another. There's been so much talk of what I at least believe is complete bullshit in terms of a Russian genocide in Ukraine and the place being just full of neo-Nazis who want to kill Russians, which seems to make no sense when they're both white, right? And the president of the country is a Jew who's exactly. So, and from the Ukrainians I've spoken to, they all seem to love Russians. They speak Russian. They're married to Russians. They have Russian family. What's your experience been when in both countries of how they view one another and how they're connected, or is it they hate each other? Like, what's your experience been personally?
Yeah, no, I would say like they all kind of consider themselves to be sort of related. Like Russians will say like, oh, it's all one people. Ukrainians will say, no, we're different, but they are, everyone recognizes the ties between it. Similarly, Canadians and Americans, or I'm sure Australians and, you know, New Zealanders or whatever they're called, having, Kiwis. You know, friends and, Kiwis, okay. Friends and family who live in the other country. And, you know, like all these Russians are like, oh, like my background, like my relatives are from Ukraine, or like vice versa, where they're Ukrainian, but they're like, oh, my dad's from Moscow, but he lives in Ukraine. And so everybody has family, like, on both sides. And so it's just really, like, weird. And also the division that that's created between families, right? Where, you know, for people in Ukraine being like, oh, like my grandma, like she won't talk to me anymore because I'm trying to tell her, like, what's really going on. She doesn't believe it. And
all, oh man, there was something on Reddit. I read that there was a daughter trying to talk to her mom in Moscow, and she was in Kyiv, and she's like, my mom doesn't believe me. I'm getting bombed by Russia. Yeah. And my mom thinks I'm lying. And you're like, what?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's the propaganda, and, you know, but that's how they do it. So it's, hopefully will resolve. But
what's it like when you're in Russia? Does the average person that you encounter just get spoon fed and swallow the Russian media propaganda? Or is it the kind of thing where they're not necessarily the majority, but a lot of people are afraid to say otherwise, especially publicly?
It's very generational again. So the young people don't support Putin very often, especially one, unless they're like kind of uneducated and not doing as well. So if anyone in bigger cities that's young generally doesn't support him. But anyone that's older typically does, or whatnot. And that's still the similar divide that you see now with things having happened between who's protesting against the war and who's fleeing versus, you know, who's supporting it and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think it's something like 60% support the war, in Russia. When you look at the statistics, like, it's the majority, and it's because of that propaganda.
Well, and again, it's, I think it comes from Kremlin polls, right? Where you kind of like, if someone from the Kremlin rings you up and says, do you support the war, or do you support the special operation? What are you going to say? Like, are you going to be like, no, please don't call this house again. Take me off your register. So,
there's that too.
What are you expecting happens ultimately as someone who is much closer? Well, you know, obviously not compared to a Russian, but as someone who spent a lot of time there. And what are your fears for Russians, Ukrainians, and even, you know, you as an outsider, as a Westerner who travels and wants to spend a lot of time there, what are your sort of fears of how this is going to play out and what it'll mean for the next, you know, could be a generation or two, right?
Yeah. I think in terms of like going back to Russia, I think a lot of people that, you know, maybe had plans to are not going to. I think for even Russians themselves that are here in Georgia, they're talking about potentially 25,000 Russians permanently settling here now. And so that with myself, like, I guess it depends a bit on what happens with Ukraine and how that resolves. And, you know, I don't know how that's going to end. I can see a couple of different options, and I mean, none of them are really great. I don't see any option being like Russia just simply backs out, right? They're going to get something if they back out, whether it's recognition of those areas that were the Donetsk and Luhansk region, you know, whether it's essentially saying, okay, like, we'll, you leave the country and we'll secede those territories to you. But, you know, even then, and when they maybe guarantee that they would never join like the EU or something, but, or NATO. But I think even then, like, it's just, it's so hard to understand or to know like what, how that's going to end. And I think really like future plans kind of just depends on what goes on with that.
You were saying at the start, after, I think you said 2008, Georgia was invaded by Russia. People stopped speaking Russian and stopped learning it. What do you see happening with Ukraine after this? Assuming that Ukraine comes out of this as a sovereign nation and isn't just resorbed back into Russia and what was the Soviet Union, what do you think is going to happen with Ukrainian identity, the role of the Ukrainian language, how Russian will be perceived as a language in Ukraine, how Ukraine will be seen externally by the rest of the world? Because I think loads of people had no idea where it was or what language they spoke or anything about them prior to this happening, but now they do. What are your thoughts on how they're going to come out of this on the other side, identity-wise?
So, yeah, identity-wise, it's going to be that much stronger, 100%. In terms of how they handle the Russian language in Ukraine, it's hard to say because on one hand, the majority of people there in my experience, unless they're from the West, still speak Russian as their first language, right? Although they learn, you know, Ukrainian in school, you know, I'll talk to people and say like, okay, but what if there's someone just got shot and you have to call the police? It's a super stressful situation. Like, what language is still going to be easier for you to speak that in? It's usually it's Russian.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say there's not exceptions. And I do have friends where like Ukrainian is legitimately their first language. But it seems like the majority of the population, Russian is still their better language. And that's not going to go away. I think that there would be a stronger push, even stronger than before, towards using Ukrainian and not Russian, which is what they've been doing over the last, you know, several years in Ukraine, bringing in laws about not allowed, being allowed to use Russian in like government institutions, that employed position, they have to start in Ukrainian by law. And then only if you speak Russian, can they like swap to Russian with you. I think that would be even stronger, but it also depends on, like when I heard about, you know, potentially Ukrainian governments talking about, you know, succeeding or a sort of a resolution of the conflict that's going on. You know, I had heard that part of that would be not putting in laws that essentially discriminate against the Russian language.
Yeah.
So who knows, like depending on how this whole resolution goes, those laws may even be reversed, you know, if that's the price that they have to pay in order to, you know, gain control back of the territory. So it's hard to say. I feel like it really depends a lot on how that plays out.
Yeah, that's the saddest part, right? It seems like Russia's just doing everything it can to kind of steamroll Ukrainian identity and history and culture and everything like that, and just absorb them back into it and just make them effectively Russians, right? Whereas yeah. Ukrainians see themselves as having their own unique language and their own unique history. Russia, at least Putin, seems to want to just be like, nah, you're part of us and we get everything. And so it is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Sorry?
Russian came from Ukrainian. Russia came from Ukraine. Everything there came from, it was Kiev and Rus at the beginning. And so like Kiev was the original, right? And Russia came from them. So yeah.
I remember learning a bit about that when I was watching Vikings, because I think they were talking about the king or the Tsar of Kiev in the year 800 or 900, right? Where the Vikings, ironically, I think, what's the translation of Russia? Is it river or canoe or something like that? And it's associated with Vikings and, you know, that they were Vikings in the past. I have to dig into this a bit more, but I heard that there's quite a connection between the two historically, and that, yeah, Russia, obviously, the language wasn't that far east, right? You had Mongolia and all these other countries and different languages out there, and then it just sort of got absorbed.
Yeah, I actually don't know what the, like, Rus would be, like, R-U-S, Rus would be, like, the core, the root there. I haven't thought about what that, I mean, it's not river, I don't think it's canoe, so you have to look into it.
Yeah, I wonder what I'm confusing there, but, yeah, it is interesting. So, how do we finish on a positive note, man?
I mean, I guess I just, like, I'm hopeful overall that, you know, things will resolve. Whether or not they will, I don't know. I do think that it will have to resolve probably within the next month, just because financially, again, between the ongoing and continuing sanctions against Russia and then the cost of supporting the war in Ukraine, like, I just think it's too huge of a financial hit for them to take to just keep this going longer than a month. So I think that's why they're starting to kind of do these talks and stuff. So in terms of whatever way it plays out, I'm thinking within the next 30 days, it'll...
Do you think it's going to have a long-lasting effect on Russians and how they see themselves? I've spoken to a lot of Russians in Australia, and they are almost ashamed to mention the fact that they're Russian now. To speak Russian in public, I have a friend who teaches online and he has his business, and he's like, oh, the Russian students won't come to class anymore. And you're just kind of like, this is just another angle where you're just like, fuck Putin. Like, talk about doing what you view as best for you, and fucking over what are almost 200 million people in the meantime in both countries. Like, the average Russian is now effectively fucked back in Russia, and the average Ukrainian is currently doubly fucked. You're kind of like, who is going to benefit from this? Especially, I think one of the heartwarming things that I've had is that I haven't heard of any Russians in Australia that I know of receiving discrimination from the average Australian. Unless they were to come out and say they're pro-Kremlin, pro-Putin, happy the war is going on, fuck Ukraine. If they were to say that sort of stuff, the average person would probably be like, you're a nut job. Like, that's, you sound like Hitler.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, at least people seem to be able to separate Putin and the Kremlin and the Russian, you know, war machine from the average Russian.
Yeah. And the only reason it's different here in Georgia is because Georgia was attacked and occupied, right, by Russia. And so they see it as like what they went through, you know, X number of years ago. And then because of that, the massive protests that have come out and the Ukrainian flag being everywhere, and then also the influx of both Ukrainians and Russians into the country and the consequences of that. So it's much more in their face and hitting close to home, if you will, that is sort of breeding that, you know, the discrimination against like the regular Russians who aren't supporting this.
Yeah, far out. Well, hopefully it ends soon. And yeah, we can get back to business, because you kind of like, this is one of those funny things, right? I chat to Russians, and especially I had a conversation with one who was in England, right? And she was pro-Putin, pro-the war, pro-Russia, fuck the West. And came out with the weirdest line for me, telling me that the West is going to fall apart because it celebrates gay people. And I was kind of like, what? Where did that come from? I was just really surprised that there was someone who was obviously not living in the country and sort of benefiting from life in the West, but still very, very much pro-Russia and pro-Putin. It kind of really, really shocked me. But fortunately for me, at least, the majority of the Russians that I interact with in Australia tend to be eyes wide open to what's actually going on. Have you experienced that kind of thing where you meet Russians abroad that are very sort of still very, very pro Putin, pro Russia, or do they tend to be much more eyes open, global citizens, intellectual, read into this sort of stuff, know how to sense make and everything? Because it seems like a lot of the smart people too are potentially going to leave Russia or have already left, right? Which is going to lead to more problems. But
yeah, I've met people like that in the West, but they're the exception and not the rule. Generally, Russians are, you know, in the West living there, like not pro Putin, or I would say like pro Russia. They usually recognize like it is my homeland and always love it because of that. But, you know, they went somewhere for a better life and they recognize they have a better life. And there are a few people like you mentioned, but they're definitely the exception.
Yeah. It's good to know. Anyway, thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it. Where can people find out more about you and what you're currently doing? Are you still working in the English teaching realm, or have you ditched that and you now have this, you know, high flying career in in online business?
So, I mean, like we still have the language school going or whatnot, but generally working on essentially like growth marketing and copywriting for SaaS companies. So it's the big focus, and it's going really well.
Brilliant. So how can people find out about you, and how can they find out your YouTube channel? Are you still smashing that out?
No, I'm actually kind of giving it up a little bit. And what's I found out just recently is I think YouTube's no longer paying out channels who do content in Russian.
What?
And so like for Russian audience. Yeah, which is crazy. So I actually have to check into that. I might not even be getting paid anymore.
How do they judge that too? Do they just look at, okay, your content's in Russian and your audience is mainly Russian, therefore, because what if it's in Russian and you're in Australia to Australian Russians or Russians who's, you know, elsewhere in the world? How do they gauge that?
Right? Like, I don't know how they do it. And like, I honestly haven't checked yet. I just found out this morning about this. So I need to go and look to see if like I've been affected by it. But I imagine they make a quick action, they probably put out like a blanket rule over like all channels matching these criteria with audience here. That would be my guess. But even Ukrainian like bloggers who make content even about Ukraine, but they do it in Russian, have like gotten blocked, like big ones. So I'm guessing people just got caught up in this blanket, and they're probably not using a lot of subjective reviews to kind of test who, you know, they need to block or whatnot.
All right. Well, I hope it ends up okay, mate. I hope it's all good. And I hope to have you back on the podcast soon.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
See you, mate.